The sixth point, the divine name of self-subsistent. This point considers the divine name of self-subsistent. It is a summary of the fifth point about the name of ever-living, an addendum to Nur Jeshmesi, the fountainhead of light, and is also considered appropriate to be an addendum to the 13th word. An apology. These important matters concerning the profound and comprehensive greatest manifestation of the name of self-subsistent occurred to me as separate flashes and are therefore not well arranged. They have moreover remained in the form of an ill-arranged, speedily written, uncorrected rough copy. For these reasons, many deficiencies and much disorderliness are bound to be apparent in the phraseology and manner of expression. You must forgive my defects for the sake of the beauties of the matters discussed. A reminder. The points concerning the greatest name are comprehensive to the utmost degree and are also extremely profound, especially the matters concerned with the name of self-subsistent, as are those of the first ray in particular. Footnote number 1. If the person reading this treatise does not have a knowledge of science, he should not begin with the first ray. He should rather begin with the second and read the first at the end. Furthermore, since these latter look to the materialists and have penetrated the subject to an even greater degree, everyone will not be able to understand every matter in all its aspects. However, everyone will be able to grasp a part of each matter to some extent, according to the rule of, even if a thing is not wholly obtained, it still should be Tegra. Even if a thing is not wholly obtained, it still should be abandoned completely. It is not reasonable to leave aside such a matter altogether, saying, I cannot pick all the fruits in this immaterial garden. However many fruits a person can pick, that amount will be of benefit. For just as the matters connected with the greatest name are extensive to the degree they cannot be comprehended, so are they also subtle to the degree the mind cannot distinguish them. Everyone's mind may not reach the fifth and sixth points concerning the names of ever-living and self-subsistent, and in particular the allusions of life to the pillars of belief and particularly to the pillar of divine determining and decree in the fifth point. But they will not remain without some share of them, and in any event these matters will strengthen their belief. The importance of strengthening belief, which is the key to eternal happiness, is truly tremendous. Even an iota's increase in belief is a treasure. Imam Rabbani Ahmed al-Furqi said, in my view, increase in only a small aspect of belief is preferable to experiencing hundreds of illuminations and spiritual delights. In the name of Allah, the Merciful, the Compassionate, in whose hand is the dominion of all things. Quran, Surah 36, verse 83. To him belong the keys of the heavens and the earth. Quran, Surah 39, verse 63. Quran, Surah 42, verse 12. And there is nothing but with us are its treasures. Quran, Surah 15, verse 21. There is not a moving creature, but he has a grasp of its forelock. Quran, Surah 42, verse 11. A point concerning verses like these, which allude to divine self-subsistence, a greatest manifestation of the name of self-subsistent, which is either the greatest name or the second of the two lights of the greatest name, or the sixth of its six lights, was imparted to my mind during the month of Dhul Qa'dah. My situation in Eskishehir prison does not allow me to explain fully that greatest light. However, Imam Ali, may Allah be pleased with him, expounded the greatest name in his ode Ajuza under the exalted name of Sakina, and in his ode Jal Jalutia. He considered, together with some other sublime names, these six names contained within the greatest name, stating them to be the greatest and most important. Moreover, I have received extraordinary consolation from his discussion of them. And so, as we have with the preceding five names, we shall allude to the name of self-subsistent, to the greatest light, with five rays in what is, at the very least, an abbreviated form. First ray. The glorious creator of the universe is self-subsistent. That is, he subsists, continues, endures of himself. All things subsist and continue through him. They remain in existence and have permanence. If that relationship of self-subsistence was cut off from the universe for even a fraction of a second, the universe would be annihilated. Furthermore, as the Quran of mighty stature decrees, together with the all-glorious one's self-subsistence, there is nothing that is like unto him. Quran Surah 42, verse 11. That is, neither in his presence, nor in his attributes, nor in his actions has he like, equal, peer, or partner. Indeed, for a most and holy one who takes the universe with its circumstances and functions in the grasp of his dominicality and who regulates, administers, sustains, and nurtures it with perfect order as though it was a house or a palace, to have any like, equal, partner, or peer is not possible. It is impossible. For sure, one for whom the creation of the stars is as easy as that of the particles, and to whose power is subjugated the greatest thing in the same way that the most minute is subjugated, and for whom nothing is an obstacle to any other thing, and no action obstructs any other action, and in whose view innumerable individuals are present in the same way that a single individual is present, and who hears all voices simultaneously, and is able to answer the limitless needs of all simultaneously, and outside the sphere of whose will and volition is nothing, no state, as is testified to by the order and balance of the beings in the universe, and who, although he is in no place, through his power and knowledge, is present everywhere, and although everything is utterly distant from him, is able to be utterly close to all things. Such an all-glorious, ever-living, and self-subsistent one most certainly can in no way have any like, equal, partner, deputy, opposite, or peer. It would be impossible. His sacred qualities and attributes can only be considered through allegory and comparison. All the comparisons and allegories in the Risale-i-Nur are of this sort. Thus, the most pure and holy one is without like, necessarily existent, utterly remote from matter and beyond space. His fragmentation and division is impossible in every respect, as is any sort of change or alteration. His being needy or impotent is beyond the bounds of possibility, and yet a group of people of misguidance suppose certain manifestations of the most pure and holy essence, which are manifested in the pages of the universe and in levels of beings, to be the most pure and holy one himself, and ascribed the degrees of the divinity to certain creatures. They attribute some of the all-glorious one's works to nature. However, it is demonstrated with conclusive proofs in numerous places in the Risale-i-Nur that nature is a divine art. It cannot be the artist. It is a dominical book, and it cannot be a scribe, tikra, and cannot be the scribe. It is an embroidery, and cannot be the embroiderer. It is a register, and cannot be the accountant. It is a law, and cannot be the power. It is a pattern, and cannot be the source. It is a recipient, and is passive, and cannot be the author. It is an order, and cannot be the orderer. It is a code of creation, and cannot be the establisher of the code. If to suppose the impossible, the tiniest animate creature was referred to nature, and it was told, "You made this," as is demonstrated in many places in the Risale-i-Nur with decisive proofs, it would then be necessary to provide moulds, or rather machines, to the number of the tiny creature's members and bodily systems so that nature could carry out the work. Moreover, although a group of people of misguidance, called materialists, perceived the greatest manifestation of divine creativity and dominical power within the orderly transformations of minute particles, since they did not know from where the manifestation came and could not understand from where that universal force was being directed, which originated from the manifestation of the eternally besought one's power. Supposing matter and force to be pre-eternal, they began to attribute the divine works to particles and their motion. Glory be to Allah. Is it possible for human beings to be so ignorant that they attribute the actions and works that can only be carried out by one who is both beyond space and also present in such a way as to see, know, and direct all things in the creation of all things everywhere, to particles in their motion, which are tossed around in the storms of lifeless, blind, unconscious chance, that lacks will and balance. Those who possess even a jot of intelligence must see just what an ignorant and superstitious idea this is. Indeed, because these wretches have abandoned absolute unity, they have fallen into a limitless and endless absolute multiplicity. That is, since they do not accept one single Allah, they are compelled to accept endless gods, which means, since they are unable to squeeze into their corrupted minds the idea of one single most pure and holy essence and the pre-eternity and creativity that are necessary and essential to him, they are compelled by their opinions to accept the pre-eternity, indeed, the divinity of those limitless, endless, lifeless particles. So, come and consider this complete and utter ignorance. For certainly the manifestation on particles has made that mass of particles into an orderly and magnificent army through the strength, power, and command of the necessarily existent one. If the Commander-in-Chief's command and power were withdrawn, even for a second, that numerous, lifeless, unconscious mass would become like irregular soldiers. It would altogether cease to exist. Furthermore, it is as if another group of people see even further, that is, they are even more ignorantly misguided. They imagine that matter known as ether, which is an extremely subtle, fine, obedient, and subjugated page of the glorious Maker's activities, a means for the transmitting of his commands, a flimsy veil for the exercise of his power, a refined ink for his writing, a most fine raiment for his creating, a leaven of his artifacts and a tillage for his seeds, to be the origin and author because it acts as a mirror to the manifestation of his dominicality. This extraordinary ignorance requires endless impossibilities, because ether is matter that is unconscious, tikra, that is unconscious, lifeless, and without will, and is finer than the matter of which particles consist, which drowns the materialists, and is denser than the index of primordial matter, into which the ancient philosophers thrust themselves. To attribute this matter, which may be fragmented and divided without limit, and is equipped with the qualities and duties of being passive and the ability to transmit, to attribute to its minute particles, which are far minuter than particles of other matter, the actions and works which exist through a will and power that sees, knows, and directs all things in all things, is mistaken to the number of particles of ether. The act of creation apparent in beings is such that it demonstrates it proceeds from a power and will which sees and knows most things. The whole universe, even, in each thing, particularly if it is animate, and which recognizes and secures the animate creature's relationship with the universe. It thus demonstrates that it cannot be the act of causes, which are material and are not all-encompassing. Through the meaning of self-subsistence, a particular creative act bears a mighty meaning that points to its being directly the act of the creator of the whole universe. For example, an act pertaining to the creation of a bee demonstrates that it is peculiar to the creator of the universe in two respects. First respect, the fact that all other bees throughout the world resembling that particular bee manifest the same act at the same time demonstrates that the particular and individual act is the tip of a comprehensive act which embraces the face of the earth. In which case, whoever is the author and owner of that vast act must also be the author of the particular act. Second respect. In order to be the author of the action directed towards the creation of the bee in question, a power and will is necessary that will be vast enough to know and secure the conditions for the life of the bee and its members and its relationship with the universe. Therefore, the one who performs the particular action will only be able to perform it thus perfectly through having authority over most of the universe. Thus, the most particular and insignificant action demonstrates in two respects that it is peculiar to the creation of all things. The most remarkable and surprising thing is this. The necessarily existent one possesses necessity, which is the firmest level of existence, absolute isolation from matter, which is the most immutable degree of existence, absolute freedom from space, which is a state of existence furthest from cessation and unity, which is the soundest quality of existence and the one remotest from change and non-existence. And yet they attribute pre-eternity and everlastingness, which are the necessarily existent one's most particular qualities and are necessary and essential to him, to things like ether and particles, which are matter that is material, unbounded and numerous. Is the least stable level of existence and the least tangible, the most changing and the most varying and the most dispersed through space. They ascribe pre-eternity to them and fancy them to be pre-eternal. And some of them even suppose that it is out of them that the divine works arise. It has been demonstrated through cogent arguments in numerous places in the Risale-Nur how contrary to truth and reality, how unreasonable and absurd is this idea. Second ray. This consists of two matters. First matter. Neither sleep overcomes him nor slumber. Quran, Surah 2, verse 255. There is not a moving creature, but he has a grasp of its forelock. Quran, Surah 11, verse 56. To him belong the keys of the heavens and the earth. Quran, Surah 39, verse 63. Surah 42, verse 12. These verses point to a greatest manifestation of the name of self-subsistent. One aspect of the mighty truth that these and verses like them indicate is as follows. The existence, continuance, and perpetuation of the heavenly bodies in the universe are tied to the mystery of self-subsistence. If the manifestation of self-subsistence was to avert its face for a moment, millions of globes, some of them 1,000 times larger than the globe of the earth, would be scattered into the infinite void of space, and colliding with one another would crash into nothingness. For example, the power of the self-subsistence of the one who keeps thousands of stately palaces in place in perfect order and makes them travel like aircraft through space is measured through the stability, order, and continuance of those palaces in space. So too the facts that the all-glorious and self-subsistent one bestows on the innumerable heavenly bodies within ethereal matter are stability, permanence and continuance, within the utmost order and balance through the mystery of self-subsistence, and together with upholding, without prop or support, in the void millions of mighty globes, some 1,000 and even some 1,000,000 times larger than the earth, entrusts them with duties and causes them to submit in perfect obedience, like a majestic army, to the decrees proceeding from the command of B, and it is, are a measure of the greatest manifestation of the name self-subsistent. In the same way, the particles of all beings also exist, like the stars, through the mystery of self-subsistence, and are permanent and continue through it. The particles in the body of an animate creature do not disperse but are assembled in groups and systems peculiar to each limb, and without scattering, preserve their position within the storms of the elements, which flow like floods and remain regular and in order. Since this self-evidently does not occur through themselves, but through the mystery of self-subsistence, and since each body is like a well-ordered regiment and each species like a regular army, these particles proclaim the mystery of self-subsistence with innumerable tongues in the same way that the continuance and motion of all animate creatures and their assemblages on the earth and that of the stars in the world of space proclaim it. Second matter. This station requires that some of the benefits and instances of wisdom in things connected with the mystery of self-subsistence are pointed out. The wisdom in the existence of all things and the aims of their natures, the benefits in their creation, and the results of their lives are of three sorts. The first sort looks to each thing itself, and to man, and to man's affairs. The second sort is more important. It is the setting forth to innumerable readers, the meanings of all things, each of which is like a sign, a missive, a book, an ode for conscious beings to study, a sign making known the manifestation of the glorious Creator's names. The third sort. This concerns the glorious Maker and looks to Him. While the benefits and results of everything that look to the things themselves are one, those looking to the glorious Maker are myriad. For the glorious Maker beholds the wonders of His art Himself. He observes the manifestation of His names in beings which He Himself has fashioned. As far as this mighty third sort is concerned, for the things to live even for a second is sufficient. There is also a mystery of self-subsistence requiring the existence of all things, which will be explained in the third ray. At one time, I was investigating the talisman of the universe and the riddle of creation, which lies in its being a manifestation, together with the instances of wisdom and benefits in beings. And I said, I wonder why these things display themselves in this way and then swiftly vanish and are lost. I look at their individual features. They have been attired, decked out, and adorned in an orderly, purposeful fashion and are sent to this display and exhibition. But then they disappear within 1 or 2 days, and some of them within a few minutes, uselessly, and in vain they vanish. What is the purpose in their being seen by us for this short time? I was most curious. Then, through divine favour, I discovered one important instance of wisdom in the fact that beings, and in particular animate beings, come into the place of instruction that is this world. It was as follows. Each being, and especially if it is animate, is an extremely meaningful word, missive, dominical ode, and divine proclamation. After it has been studied by all conscious beings and has stated its meaning to innumerable speakers, its corporeal form, which is like a letter or word, disappears. For about a year, this instance of wisdom was sufficient for me. Then the truly wonderful and subtle miracles of art to be found in creatures, and in particular in animate beings, were disclosed. I understood that these subtleties of art, which are so fine and wonderful, are not only to set forth meanings for the gazes of conscious beings. For although innumerable conscious creatures may study each being, their studying is both limited and furthermore, all of them may be unable to penetrate all the subtleties of art in those animate creatures. That is to say, the most important result of the creation of animate beings and the most significant purpose of their natures is to be present to the pre-eternal, self-subsistent one's own gaze, the marvels of his art, and the compassionate gifts and bounties that he has bestowed. As for this purpose, it contented me for a long time, and from it I understood the following. The wisdom and purpose of creation, which is to present the endless subtleties of art in beings, particularly in animate beings, to the gaze of the pre-eternally self-subsistent one, that is, for he himself to behold his own art, was sufficient for that vast outlay. Sometime later, I realized that the subtleties of art in the individual features and forms of beings did not continue. They were being renewed and were undergoing change at great speed. They were being transformed within an endless activity and creativity. I started to ponder over it, saying, the wisdom in this creativity and activity must necessarily be as extensive as the activity itself. Then the two instances of wisdom mentioned above began to appear insufficient. They lacked something. With extreme curiosity, I began to search and seek for a purpose and instance of wisdom. All praise be to Allah. Through the effulgence of the Quran, of miraculous exposition, after some time a vast and limitless wisdom and purpose became apparent at the level of the mystery of self-subsistence, and through it a divine mystery called the talisman of the universe and riddle of creation was understood. Since it is explained in detail in the 24th letter, here we shall only briefly mention 2 or 3 points in the third ray. Look from this point to the manifestation of the mystery of self-subsistence. It has plucked all beings out of non-existence and according to the meaning of the verse. It is Allah who has raised the heavens without any supports that you can see. Quran, Surah 13, verse 2, has caused each one of them to remain in infinite space, bestowing on them stability and permanence. It has thus caused them all to display the manifestation of the mystery of self-subsistence. If there was not this support, nothing at all could continue to exist of its own accord. Everything would topple over into an infinite void and tumble into non-existence. Furthermore, just as all beings rely on the all-glorious self-subsistent one for their existence, stability, and permanence, they continue in existence through him. So too according to the meaning of the verse, "And to him goes back every affair." Quran Surah 11, verse 123. The tips of thousands of chains or lines in the states and conditions of beings are fastened to the mystery of self-subsistence, which, if the comparison is not mistaken, is like the center or central pole of telephone and telegraph lines. If they did not rely on the luminous point of support, thousands of unending sequences of causes would be necessary, which, according to scholars, is impossible and false tikra, is an impossible and false notion. In fact, there would have to be as many of these absurd unending sequences of causes as there are beings. For example, one thing, protection or light or existence or sustenance, for instance, in one respect relies on the next thing, and that on the next, and that on the next, until finally, since it cannot be infinite, it has to come to an end. Thus, the end of all such lines and sequences lies in the mystery of self-subsistence. But when the mystery of self-subsistence has been understood, the links and meanings of each thing relying on the next in those imaginary sequences do not remain, they disappear, and everything is seen to look directly to the mystery of self-subsistence. Third ray. By means of one or two introductory points, we shall point out to the small degree the disclosure of the mystery of self-subsistence within divine creativity and dominical activity, which verses like the following allude to. Every day he manifests himself in yet another way. Quran Surah 55, verse 29. A sovereign doer of whatever he wills. Quran Surah 11, verse 107. He creates whatever he wishes. Quran Surah 30, verse 34, etc. In whose hand is the dominion of all things? Quran Surah 36, verse 83. So look to the signs of Allah's mercy, how he restores the earth to life after its death. Quran Surah 30, verse 50. Tekra. Quran Surah 30, verse 50. The first, when we look at the universe, we see the one group of creatures, which are tossed around in the flood of time and follow on one after the other, convoy after convoy, come for a second and then immediately vanish. Another group comes for a minute and then passes on. One species stops by in the manifest word for an hour and then enters the world of the unseen. Some of them come and alight in the manifest world for a day, some of them for a year, some for a century, and some for an age. They perform their duties and then depart. This astonishing travelling and passage of beings and flow and flux of creatures is driven and directed with such order, balance, and wisdom, and the one who commands them and those convoys does so with such insight, purpose, and planning that even if all minds were to unite and become one mind, it would be unable to comprehend the essence of this wise direction. It would be unable to find any fault in it, and so could not criticize it. Thus, within this dominical activity, not even allowing any of those pleasing creatures that it loves, especially animate creatures, to open their eyes, the pen of divine determining and decree dispatches them to the world of the unseen, not permitting them even to draw a breath. It discharges them from the life of this world. It continuously fills the guest house of the world and empties it without the guest's consent, making the globe of the earth like a slate for writing and erasing. Through the manifestation of, he grants life and deals death. Quran Surah 2, verse 258. The pen of divine determining and decree ceaselessly inscribes on it writings and renews and replaces them. One meaning of the wisdom in this dominical activity and divine creativity, and a fundamental requirement and motive cause of them, is a limitless, endless instance of wisdom that may be divided into three important branches. The first branch of that wisdom is this: every sort of activity, whether particular or universal, yields pleasure. Rather, there is a pleasure in all activity. Indeed, activity is pure pleasure, or activity is the manifestation of existence, which is pure pleasure, and is the shaking off and becoming distant from non-existence, which is pure suffering. Everyone with ability follows with pleasure the unfolding of his ability through activity. The revealing of innate talents through activity arises from a pleasure and results in a pleasure. Everyone who possesses some perfections follows with pleasure through activity. Since there is present in every activity a perfection and pleasure, which is thus loved and sought after, and activity too is a perfection, and since there are apparent in the world of animate creatures the manifestations of a boundless love and infinite compassion which arise from a perpetual and pre-eternal life, those manifestations show that as the requirement of that eternal life, which is fitting for the necessary existence of the one who thus loves and is compassionate and makes himself loved and is worthy of his holiness, there are, if the terms are not mistaken, at the utmost level sacred qualities in that most pure and holy life-like divine passion, hallowed love, and sheer pleasure. And it is these qualities that continuously renew, agitate, and change the universe through endless activity and an infinite creativity. The second branch of the wisdom in the limitless divine activity, which looks to the mystery of self-subsistence, this looks to the divine names. It is well known that everyone who possesses beauty wants to both see and display his beauty, that everyone who possesses some skills desires and loves to attract attention to his skills by exhibiting and proclaiming them. He desires and loves his skill, which is a beautiful truth and meaning that has remained concealed, to be revealed and to find ardent admirers. These fundamental rules are in force in all things according to the degree of each. According to the testimony of the universe and the evidence of the manifestations and embroideries of the 1,001 most beautiful names of the all-glorious self-subsistent one, who possesses absolute beauty, there are, in every degree of each of those names, a true loveliness, a true perfection, a true beauty, and a most exquisite truth. Indeed, in every degree there are endless different sorts of loveliness and innumerable beautiful truths. Since the mirrors reflecting the sacred beauties of those names, and the tableau displaying their beautiful embroideries, and the pages setting forth their beautiful truths, are all the beings of the universe, those constant and eternal names will entirely and unceasingly renew and change the universe through their manifestations as a consequence of that sacred divine love and due to the mystery of self-subsistence. In this way, they will display their endless manifestations and infinite, meaningful embroideries and books, both to the witnessing gaze of the all-glorious self-subsistent one, whom they signify, and to the studying gaze of uncountable numbers of conscious creatures and creatures endowed with spirits, and will display countless tableaux out of a finite and limited thing, and numerous individuals out of a single individual, and multiple truths out of a single truth. Fourth ray, the third branch of the wisdom in the constant and astonishing activity in the universe. Everyone who is compassionate is happy at giving pleasures to others. And everyone who is kind is gratified at making others happy. Everyone who is loving is gladdened by pleasing others who are worthy of being pleased. And everyone who is noble-hearted takes pleasure at making others happy. Everyone who is just rejoices at upholding justice and at winning the gratitude of those whose rights are vindicated by punishing those who deserve it. And every skillful craftsman takes pride in exhibiting his work, at its functioning as he imagined it would function, and at its giving the desired results. Thus, each of the above-mentioned principles is a fundamental rule which is in force throughout the universe and the world of mankind. Three examples demonstrating that these rules function in the divine names have been explained in the third stopping place of the 32nd word. Since it is appropriate to write a summary of them, at this point we say the following. For example, an extremely kind, generous, munificent, noble-hearted person who embarks the poor and needy on a large ship, gratifies them with banquets and bounties, and sails it in the seas around the world, himself being superior to them, will watch them happily, take pleasure at those needy people's gratitude, rejoice and be pleased at their taking pleasure, and feel proud. If one who is merely like a distribution official takes such pleasure and delight at holding an insignificant banquet, then consider the following. The ever-living and self-subsistent one embarks all animals and men and countless angels, jinn and spirit beings on the ship of the earth, which is a vessel of that all-merciful one. He spreads the face of the earth before them as a dominical table laden with varieties of foods and with delights and sustenance for all the senses. He causes those needy, thankful, grateful, and happy creatures to sail the regions of the universe, and not only makes them happy in this world with all these bounties, but also makes each of those bounties a table in the unending banquets in paradises of the eternal realm. It is therefore the meaning of dominicality alluded to by the divine qualities arising from the thanks, gratitude, joy, and delight of those creatures which look to the ever-living and self-subsistent one, which we are powerless and also not permitted to express, like holy pleasure, sacred pride, and hallowed delight, that necessitate this constant activity and ceaseless creativity. And for example, if a skillful craftsman builds a gramophone which requires no records, and it plays just as he wishes, how proud and delighted he will be. He will say to himself, "What wonders Allah willed!" If an insignificant piece of art in which there is no true creation engenders a feeling of such pride and pleasure in the craftsman's spirit, then consider the following. The all-wise Maker creates the totality of the universe as a divine orchestra and wondrous workshop which strikes up and gives forth countless sorts of songs and hymns, praises and glorification. He displays all the species, all the worlds in the universe through a different craft and different miracles of art. And not only does he fashion many machines in the heads of animate creatures, each like a gramophone, camera or telegraph, but he also fashions in the heads of all human beings, not only a gramophone without records, a camera without film, a telegraph without wires, but a machine 20 times more powerful. It is therefore meanings like sacred pride and holy pleasure and the exalted qualities of this sort which proceed from dominicality and arise from creating such machines, and their functioning in the required way and producing the desired results that necessitate this unceasing activity. And for example, a just ruler takes pleasure and is gratified and feels proud at taking the part of the oppressed against tyrants in order to uphold justice, at protecting the poor against the wrongdoing of the powerful, and at giving to everyone his due. Since this is a fundamental rule of rulership and justice, then consider the following. The ever-living and self-subsistent one, who is the all-wise ruler and is absolutely just, bestows on all creatures, and especially on animate ones, the necessary conditions for life, tikra, the necessary conditions for life, which are known as the rights of life, and in order to preserve their lives, he grants them the necessary abilities and members, and he compassionately protects tikra, and he compassionately protects the weak from the evil of the powerful. Therefore, the dominical qualities and sacred meanings, which we are powerless to express, that arise from this and from the execution of the mystery of justice, which in this world is total with regard to establishing justice for all animate beings and partial with regard to punishing wrongdoers, and especially that arise from the manifestation of supreme justice at the supreme tribunal of the resurrection, necessitate the constant activity in the universe. Thus, as these three examples show, since each of the most beautiful names is the means for certain sacred divine qualities in this unceasing activity, they require unceasing creativity. And since the development, unfolding, and blossoming of all abilities and faculties yield a joy, expansiveness, and pleasure, and since on the performance and completion of a duty, and on being released from it, everyone entrusted with such a duty experiences a great feeling of relief and gratitude. And since to receive many fruits from a single seed and to gain a hundredfold profit from a single thing is the most pleasurable trade, then most certainly the one who causes the innumerable abilities of all creatures to unfold, after employing all creatures in valuable duties, will discharge them, but to a higher state. That is to say, he raises elements to the level of minerals, minerals to plant life, plants to the level of animal life by means of sustenance, and animals to the high level of human life, which is conscious. It may be understood, then, just how important are the sacred meanings and divine dominicality arising from the constant activity and dominical creativity, which, on the demise of their external existences, cause all animate creatures to leave behind multiple existences taken from them. Like their spirits, essences, identities, forms, existences in the worlds of similitudes, knowledge and the unseen, the sheaths of the spirits and astral bodies, all of which are charged with duties in their places. This is explained in the 24th letter, a decisive answer to an important question. One group of the people of misguidance say that the one who changes and transforms the universe with his constant activity must himself be subject to change and alteration. The answer, Allah forbid, 100,000 times, Allah forbid. The fact that mirrors on the ground change demonstrates not that the sun in the sky changes, but on the contrary, that its manifestations are being renewed. Moreover, change and alteration are impossible in the most pure and holy essence, who is pre-eternal, post-eternal, sempiternal, in every respect, absolutely perfect and absolutely self-sufficient, totally free of, detached from, and beyond matter, space, restriction, and contingency. Change in the universe points not to his changing, but to his lack of change and alteration. For one who constantly causes change and causes numerous things to move must himself be unchanging and not move. For example, if you spin a large number of globes and balls which have each been tied to a piece of string and cause them all to move unceasingly within an order, it is necessary for you to remain in one place and not to change it or move, for if you did move, it would spoil the order. It is clear that one who causes objects to move with order must himself not move, and one who causes objects to change ceaselessly must himself be unchanging so that these actions may continue in an orderly fashion. Secondly, change and alteration arise from createdness, from being renewed in order to be perfected, from need, from materiality, from contingency. Since the most pure and holy essence is both eternal and in every respect absolutely perfect, absolutely self-sufficient, and totally detached from matter, and necessarily existent, most certainly his changing and altering is not possible, it is impossible. Fifth ray, first matter. If we wish to see the greatest manifestation of the name of self-subsistent, we may set up two telescopes in order to observe the whole universe with our imaginations. One of them will show the most distant objects, the other the most minute particles. So, if we look through the first telescope, we see that through the manifestation of the name of self-subsistent and without support of millions of globes and stars, thousands of times larger than the Earth, some have been made apparently stationary in the matter known as ether, which is subtler than air, while others have been made to travel apparently as their duty. Next, we look through the second telescope, which is the microscope of the imagination, so that we may see minute particles through the mystery of self-subsistence, taking up an orderly position like the stars. Particles in the bodies of animate creatures on the earth are in motion and performing their duties. We see that especially the minuscule agglomerations forming the particles known as red corpuscles and white corpuscles in the blood of animate beings, like the planets, move with two well-ordered motions like Mevlevi dervishes. A summary, footnote number 18. This is an extremely brief summary of the six sacred names which bear the greatest name and are the basis and subject of the six main sections of the 30th flash. A summary is appropriate here in order to examine the sacred light, the six names of the greatest name, form blending together like the seven colours in light. It is as follows. Look beyond the greatest manifestation of the name of self-subsistent, which thus upholds and gives permanence and continuity to all the beings in the universe. The greatest manifestation of the name of ever-living has set aflame all animate beings with its manifestation. It has illuminated the universe. It gilds all animate beings with its manifestation. Now look again. Beyond the name of ever-living, the greatest manifestation of the name of single includes the whole universe with all its elements and pairs in a unity. It puts a stamp of unity on the forehead of each being. It places a seal of oneness on each being's face. It causes them to proclaim its manifestation with endless, countless tongues. And now consider the greatest manifestation of the name of sapient beyond the name of single. It includes each of the beings we observe through the two telescopes of the imagination, from stars to particles, whether universal or particular, from the greatest sphere to the most minute, to the most minute, in a fruitful order, wise regularity, and purposeful harmony appropriate to each. It adorns and gilds all beings. And then look beyond the greatest manifestation of the name of sapient, according to its aspect, which was examined in the first point. Through the greatest manifestation of the name of all just, the whole universe, with all its beings, is administered with such balance, equilibrium, and measure, within unceasing activity, that if just one of the heavenly bodies were to lose its balance, even for a second, that is, if it were to break free of the manifestation of the name of all just, it would cause chaos among the stars. It would be like doomsday. Thus, all beings and all different realms of beings, from the army of the stars to the army of minute particles, that is, from the largest sphere, that is the vast belt known as the Milky Way, to the sphere of the motion of red and white corpuscles standing shoulder to shoulder in a manner gauged with the finest balance and measure, demonstrates that all those beings are obedient and totally subjugated to the commands proceeding from the command of be, and it is. Now look beyond the greatest manifestation of the name of all just to the greatest manifestation of the name of most holy, which was explained in the first point. The fact that it renders all the beings in the universe so pure, clean, clear, beautiful, adorned, and shining demonstrates that it has bestowed on the universe and on all the beings the form of beautiful mirrors worthy of and befitting for reflecting the utter essential beauty of the absolutely beautiful one and the sheer loveliness of the most beautiful names. In short, these six names and six lights of the greatest name have enwrapped the universe and all beings in ever-differing and various colours, embroideries, and adornment. Second matter of the fifth ray. Just as the manifestation of self-subsistence in the universe is at the level of unity and glory, so it is in man, who is the centre, pivot, and conscious fruit of the universe, at the level of oneness and beauty. That is to say, just as the universe subsists through the mystery of self-subsistence, so does it in one respect subsist through man, who is the most complete place of manifestation of the name of self-subsistent. For since most of the wisdom, aims, purposes, and benefits in the universe look to man, it is as if the manifestation of self-subsistence in him is a support for the universe. Indeed, It may be said that the ever-living and self-subsistent one willed man to be in the universe and created it for him. For with comprehensiveness of his nature, man can understand and take pleasure in all the divine names. In particular, he can understand many divine names through the pleasure to be found in sustenance, whereas the angels cannot know them through that pleasure. As a result of this important comprehensiveness of man, the ever-living and self-subsistent one has given him a stomach and appetite through which he allows him to understand all his names and to taste all the varieties of his bounty. And he has generously laden the table with endless varieties of food for man's stomach. He has made life a stomach too, like the physical one. And before the senses, which are like the hands of the stomach of life, has spread a most extensive table of bounties. Through its senses, life offers thanks for each sort of benefit on the table of bounties. And after the stomach of life, he has bestowed on man the stomach of humanity, which requires sustenance and bounties in a wider sphere than life. Intelligence, mind, and imagination, like the hands of this stomach, benefit from the table of mercy, which is as broad as the heavens and earth, and give thanks. And after the stomach of humanity, he has spread before man another table of bounties, which is infinitely vast. He has made the benefits of Islam like an immaterial stomach, requiring much sustenance, and has extended its table outside the sphere of contingency, and included it in the divine names. Thus, through this stomach, and the greatest pleasure of sustenance, man perceives the names of all merciful and all wise, and exclaims, "All praise be to Allah for his mercifulness and his wisdom," and so on. Man is able to benefit from limitless divine bounties through this vast immaterial stomach. And there is a further sphere in this stomach, which is the sphere of divine love. Thus, the ever-living and self-subsistent one has made man a center and pivot of the whole universe. He has spread before him a table of bounties as broad as the universe, and subjugated the universe to him. The reason for this, and for the universe, in one respect, subsisting through the mystery of self-subsistence, manifest through man are man's three important duties. His first duty, all the varieties of bounties dispersed throughout the universe, are put into order through man. All those things beneficial to man are strung like prayer beads on a string, and the ends of the strings of those bounties tied to man's head. Man is thus made a list of all the varieties of the treasuries of mercy. His second duty, by reason of his comprehensiveness, this is for man to be the most perfect addressee of the ever-living and self-subsistent one, through appreciating and admiring his astonishing arts, to be his loudest herald, and through offering every kind of conscious thanks to give praise, glory, and thanks for all the varieties of his bounties and the limitless different sorts of his gifts. His third duty, through his life, it is to act as a mirror to the ever-living and self-subsistent one and his qualities and all-embracing attributes in three respects. First aspect, this is to perceive through his own absolute impotence the absolute power of his creator and its levels. And through the degrees of his impotence, the degrees of his power, it is to understand through his absolute poverty, his mercy, and the degrees of his mercy, and through his own weakness, his strength, and so on. Through his own defective attributes, it is to be a mirror, which is like a measuring instrument to his creator's attributes of perfection. In the same way that darkness of the night is a perfect mirror for displaying electric light, the brilliance of the light being in proportion to the darkness of the night, man acts as a mirror to the divine perfections through his own defective attributes. Second aspect, using the universe as a yardstick, and through his own partial will, tiny knowledge, minute power, and apparent ownership, and through building his own house, man understands and acts as a mirror to the ownership, art, will, power, and knowledge of the fashioner of the universe. Third aspect, man's acting as a mirror, in this respect, has two faces. First, it is to display in himself the ever-differing embroideries of the divine names. To put it simply, by reason of his comprehensiveness, man is like a tiny index, a miniature specimen of the universe, and so displays the embroideries of all the names. Second face. This face acts as a mirror to the divine attributes, that is to say, just as man points to the life of the ever-living and self-subsistent one through his own life, so does he act as a mirror to and make known the attributes of the ever-living and self-subsistent one, such as hearing and sight, by means of his own sense of hearing and sense of sight that develop during his lifetime. Furthermore, man acts as a mirror to the sacred attributes of the ever-living and self-subsistent one, through the very numerous and responsive senses, meanings, and emotions that are present with his life, which do not develop, but which boil up in the form of feelings and emotions. For example, as a result of such emotions, through meanings like loving and feeling proud, pleased, happy, and cheerful, he acts as a mirror to attributes of that sort. On condition that they are suitable and worthy for the sacredness and absolute self-sufficiency of the most pure and holy essence. Also, through his comprehensive life, man is an instrument which recognizes and measures the attributes and qualities of the All-Glorious One and is an index of the manifestation of his names, and a conscious mirror, and so on. He acts as a mirror to the ever-living and self-subsistent one in many respects. Man is also a unit of measurement, an index, a scale, and a balance to the truths of the universe. For example, an extremely decisive evidence of the existence of the preserved tablet in the universe, and an example of it is the faculty of memory in man, and a decisive evidence of the existence of the world of similitudes, and an example of it is man's faculty of imagination, and an evidence of the existence of spirit beings in the universe, and an example of them are the powers and subtle faculties in man. Footnote number 19. Indeed, the elements in man indicate and point to the elements in the universe, and his bones to the stones and rocks, his hair to its plants and trees, and the blood which flows in the body, and the fluids which issue from his eyes, ears, nose and mouth, to the spring and mineral waters of the earth. Similarly, man's spirit points to the spirit world, his faculty of memory to the preserved tablet, and his power of imagination to the world of similitudes and so on. Each of his members and faculties points to a different world and bears decisive witness to their existence. And so on. In a small measure, man may display, in a manner that cannot be denied, the truths of the universe, Tikra, the truths of belief in the universe. Thus, man performs many important functions, like the duties mentioned above. He is a mirror to enduring beauty. He is the place of manifestation announcing sempiternal perfection. He is one needy and thankful for eternal mercy. Since beauty, perfection, and mercy are everlasting and eternal, it is surely necessary and inevitable that man, who is the desirous mirror to enduring beauty, the enraptured herald of everlasting perfection, and one thankful and needy for eternal mercy, will go to an everlasting realm in order to remain there permanently, that he will go to eternity in order to accompany those eternal qualities, and will accompany that eternal beauty, everlasting perfection, and ever-enduring mercy for all eternity. For an eternal beauty cannot be content with an impermanent admirer, a mortal lover. Since beauty loves itself, it desires love in return for its love. Transience and impermanence transform such love into enmity. If man was not going to go to eternity and remain there permanently, in place of his innate love of eternal beauty, there would be enmity. As is described in a footnote in the 10th word, one time a celebrated beauty expelled a lover from her presence, whereupon his love turned into enmity, and in order to console himself, he said, "Ugh, how ugly she is," thus insulting and denying her beauty. Indeed, man is hostile to what is unfamiliar to him in the same way that he quite simply wishes to be hostile to and to discover the faults of things he cannot obtain or possess. Since, as the whole universe testifies, the true beloved and absolutely beautiful one causes man to love himself through his most beautiful names, which are altogether exquisite, and desires man to love him, then most certainly he would not endow man, who is both his beloved and his lover, with an innate enmity and cause him to be vexed with himself from afar. He would not endow man's spirit with a hidden enmity, which would be altogether contrary to man's nature, who is both by his nature most lovable and loving creature, and the most exceptional that he is created for worship. for man would only be able to cure the deep wounds caused by eternal separation from an absolute beauty that he loves and whose value he appreciates for enmity towards it, being vexed with and denying it. It is from this point that the enmity towards Allah Almighty of the unbelievers arises, in which case the pre-eternal beauty will surely make manifest in man a perpetual life in a permanent realm in order to be present together with him, who is an enraptured mirror to himself on the journey to post-eternity. Since man has been created in such a way that by his very nature he longs for and loves for an ever-enduring beauty, and since an ever-enduring beauty cannot be content with him with an impermanent lover, and since in order to find consolation from the pain and sorrow arising from some aim that he does not know or cannot attain or possess, man pacifies himself through discovering the faults of such an aim, rather through nurturing a hidden enmity towards it. And since the universe was created for man, and man was created to know and love Allah, and since the creator of the universe, together with his names, is eternal, and since the manifestation of his names will be perpetual, everlasting, and post-eternal, then man will most certainly go to an everlasting realm and will manifest an everlasting life. Furthermore, Muhammad the Arabian, peace and blessings be upon him, who was the supreme guide and perfect man, made known and demonstrated in the most perfect form in himself and in his religion the value and all the perfections and duties we have explained above concerning man. This demonstrates that the universe was created for mankind, and its aim and object is mankind. So too the aim and object of mankind, and its choicest and most valuable member, and its most brilliant mirror to the single and eternally besought one, is Ahmad Muhammad, peace and blessings be upon him, upon whom and upon whose family be blessings and peace to the number of good deeds of his community. O Allah, O most merciful one, O most compassionate one, O single one, O ever-living one, O self-subsistent one, O sapient one, O all-just one, O most holy one, we beseech you, through the truth of your all-wise criterion of truth and falsehood, the Quran, and through the veneration for your most noble beloved, and through the truth of your most beautiful names, and through veneration of your greatest name, to preserve us from the evil of the instinctual soul and of Satan and from the evil of jinn and men. Amen. Glory be unto you. We have no knowledge save that which you have taught us. Indeed, you are all-knowing, all-wise.